Johnson.
Don't believe what I just saw.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
Guys, Sportsaholics number 78, welcome. How are you guys doing? We got Eric up in Hollywood. I'm down a little further south. Not to interrupt you, Eric. Go on with the go up. 1,000 Periscope viewers. Now, what is...
So apparently, we had 1,000 live viewers for Periscoping our show up, go up variety show Sunday night at the world famous Comedy Store from 11 to 1. Which is, that's interesting. And by the way, thanks to all the listeners out there who are, A, listening, because our Sportsaholics numbers have been way up there.
Yeah, speaking of thousands, absolutely, yeah. 1,000 new listeners this week, too. So, guys, thanks for listening. I know it's on Stitcher's helping. iTunes is helping. Even the Podbean.com is helping. But, guys, thanks for listening, and thanks for spreading the word, because, honestly, we've had close to 4,000 listens already. The first three episodes back, and that's all you guys. You know, and that's on Twitter. And all that stuff too, but 1,000 live streams on the Periscope. And now for you older folks out there, Periscope's a new app on your phone. And if you don't know what an app is, go ahead and just shut the show off right now. But an app on your phone, it's where you can pull it up and you can live stream anything. And they've had different variations of this in the past, but for whatever reason, this is the one that's the easiest to use. And for you to attract a 1,000,
it's also backed by Twitter, is what happened. There was another, like when I was at South by Southwest with Roast Battle, they were premiering an app called Meerkat. But then Meerkat seemed to stumble after those first couple weeks, and Twitter came out with this Periscope, this Periscoping, and then that really seemed to go truly viral when the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight had a lot of people sort of illegally Periscoping. They were just basically live streaming their phone on the fight.
You know, so
you didn't have to pay the $100 or whatever it was. Pay-per-view.
I actually watched the Manny Pacquiao fight actually on Periscope at the Padres game. I was at Petco Park watching the baseball game, trying to find the Manny Pacquiao Periscope feed. Because every time you'd find one, then they would take it down and you'd find a new one. But they were everywhere. But yeah, that's very interesting. That was actually a perfect kind of timing, intentional or not, but really helped launch this app into everyone's peripheral.
Well, and I know that there's at least one comic I know that picked up 1,000 or 2,000 Periscope followers just because she Periscoped the fight. and that's an interesting thing in an interesting time. And apparently she's, everything they've been saying about the internet is finally starting to work for us and for the show up, go up. And, this is amazing that, there was probably never, the room was pretty packed last night, Sunday night, 11 to 1. I'd say we had 60. Maybe as many 70 people in there, but you're really saying that then another 1,000 eyes, well, 2,000 eyes really, get to look at what you're doing inside the belly room. That's exciting.
No, it's very exciting. I remember 5-6 years ago talking about with Red Band on the Death Squad Network. Great shows there. We've had him on several of the guest Death Squad. Personalities on Sportsaholics as well. But I remember talking to him about, I was like, hey, what if we did a live show and broadcasting? And that was at the early stages of Ustream, which is an incredible, company. And they do, Red Band still uses them a lot. But this is like, you can just pull your phone out. It runs smoothly. And that's great for the comics. Because, as the host, if you're getting up there and you're saying, hey, this is Kenny Lyons, this is XYZ, then that gives the people at home like, oh, maybe I should go look this guy up real quick. And then that's the power power of that is like you go from all of a sudden you walk up into a room and say there's 20 people and they're all comics. You're like, you know what, whatever. This is just a garbage show. I'm going to go through the motions. But you know there's 1,000 people at home watching. You know, maybe you try. Maybe you care a little bit more. And you know what? If you're a comic listening to this and that's what it takes for you to care, just hang up the cleats right now because you're not in it for the right reasons. But that's still – that's awesome that you're able to provide that to the belly room, which max capacity up there is what, 80, 100 people?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fire code is something like 120.
So, yeah, something like that.
I'm not even sure what the capacity is. But then you're saying, like, let's just say it's 100 and 1,000 people go on Periscope. You know, that's 10 times the number of people you've 10 times the size of the venue that you've just performed at.
That's awesome, man. Well, and again, that's every Sunday. If you're in Hollywood, that's Eric Marino, Oh That Marino on Twitter. Show up, up at open mic. And we've been tweeting out also, and they actually have their own Twitter, Show Up, Go Up Mic or Show.
It's the Show Up, Go Up Show.
Yes.
Show Up, Go Up Show on Twitter.
Well, Eric, we're on episode number 78. This is the Bruce Smith episode. I didn't know this.
Oh, Bruce Smith.
The first, not to be confused.
Stand up for Bruce Smith.
Not to be confused with Reggie White, to all you 30-somethings out there. Bruce Smith.
They are both dead.
No, they are not. Bruce Smith is not dead. I thought he was.
I thought he was dead.
I had to look
him up. Bruce Smith was dead.
No, it was Reggie White passed away in his sleep sure. apnea, you know. But right. they're always confused because of their sack history. Bruce Smith holds the record for most sacks in a season, and Reggie White has the controversial career sack leading record, which is disputed because there are some USFL sacks that were included into that. Yeah. So, you know, that's a pun. But Bruce Smith, Virginia Tech graduate, first overall pick in the 1985 draft. So there is a first overall pick that was not a bust at all. Hall of Famer. And for you youngsters out there, go look up Bruce Smith, because this is a player that went to 4 straight Super Bowls and lost all 4 of them. Yep. And still continued to play at amazingly high level. Fantastic player. So that's us this week, episode number 78. It's actually a great episode. We have Chris Kamler from BrokenBatSingle.com at the Fake Net on, talk about all-star voting and where the Royals stand and where the rest of the country stands on the Royals all-star voting. And then later in the show, we got Bart Slabcorn from GaslampBall.com, a really, really good Padres blogger, gives us some insights on their offseason moves and how they're not really working out, and how really this stretch this week and next week is, it all comes down, all those moves they made, the Upton move, the Shields move, the bringing in not Kimbers, my girlfriend calls him Kimbers, but Kimbrel from Atlanta, all these moves that were going to make them a competitor, it's now or nothing for them. So they're either gonna, you know, start riding the ship and winning games, or they're gonna just probably clean house in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting to see. But we've had a lot of sports since we've talked last. Mainly, I guess we can just start off with the NBA Finals. I'm not an NBA expert, but what did you think? What were your thoughts on the finals? Did you get to catch any of the games?
I did. I mean, it's one of those telling things that there were a lot of people that were living in the LeBron and the Cavaliers in 6. And, you know, it's like, you know, by the way, I appreciate individual great players, Jordans, the Birds, the Magic, the LeBrons, but there's still a point where it's a team game. It's a team game, and the Warriors were so clearly the better team. And to be fair to the Cavaliers, you're talking about, like, you know, people, I think, rhapsodic a little bit too crazily about how good LeBron was, because he's like, hey, he's taking this game. You know, it's like, he won 2 games in the finals without Love or Irving, but if it wasn't for both of them at various times during the season and then during the playoffs, he might not have gotten to the finals. And then, you know, he just had, you know, you have the Dellavedovas and the Mozgovs and, you know, this weird team
you got
that he's playing with. I mean, it's just, you know, as everyone had said, it's LeBron and 4 guys he met at the bus stop who happened to be wearing matching outfits.
Well, he got game one and two, we got like a Jeremy Lin-esque performance out of Dellavedova, and that ended immediately starting after that game. Like, that stopped, you know, and then he still felt like he had the hot hand and just shot his way out of the series. I don't even know how many points he scored in the last two, three games combined, but it might have equaled his game two point total in its entirety. But, you know, you're right. You can't win, especially against a team as good as Golden State was. You're not going to beat a team like that one on five, even though LeBron came pretty damn close to doing it. And I don't know if this...
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty amazing that, I mean, you know, it's like for a good part of the series, the Warriors were sort of letting LeBron walk the ball up. It was very interesting. In some ways, one of the more interesting things to watch was watching the Cavs sort of try to manage LeBron's minutes, because you were just watching a guy who was playing 41 minutes a game, or, you know, whatever. I mean, they were trying to take him out. There's 30 seconds to go in the first quarter, and we'll sit him so then he can sit for those 30, then the timeout, the commercial timeout, and sit for maybe a minute of the next, you know, and basically he can sit on the bench for 5 minutes, but only miss about a minute and a half of actual game time.
No, you're right.
That was very interesting.
No, it was, and that's really kind of, to me, you know, really showed a light on how much stress and physically how physically he was getting beat down. Because it's rare that when you go into a timeout, when they come back, when they're saying, okay, LeBron's been out of this game a total of 2.5 minutes, but really on your clock, that's really 27 minutes and 45 seconds. And I'm just like, who's like sitting there with a timer, like during commercial breaks, like, you know, that's how important this was. They're like, we need to account for every second that he's not on the court, whether the clock's running or not, you know. And that, as soon as I started hearing that, I was like, wow, it really is one on five. There is nobody else that matters on this team.
A lot of people were very quick to say, hey, you know, what LeBron's doing is like one of the greatest things for a single player to do with a very, you know, the rest of the team just isn't holding their weight. And now he's elevating the team around him in a final. And I guess maybe you could say winning two finals games with that cast of characters is an amazing achievement, but is it the ultimate achievement? Because in some ways, I'm really reminded of the Allen Iverson 2000 team that went against the Lakers.
Yeah.
And you're going, and it's like, I mean, it's like, to me, what Iverson did with that team, which included like the likes of Eric Snow, that was because, you think it's like,
That's the infamous Allen Iverson steps over.
Everyone knows LeBron James is a great athlete. Allen Iverson is very, very little.
And that's okay. That's the series where Allen Iverson hits the three in the corner and steps over Tyronn Lue, correct?
Yeah.
And you got Eric Snow, and it was Iverson, and God, who was the white guy they had on that team?
Well, you had not the white guy, but Theo Ratliff was on that team.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Know, it was a bunch of, God, I mean, you know, when you say white guy, I mean, Eric Montrose could have been on that team.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So it was a bad team, but that, you know, that's what happens sometimes with, you know, the bad Eastern Conference. I mean, there were certainly things that you wanted to look like, hey, man, I think I would have preferred watching I would prefer to see the Chicago Bulls as a team go against the Warriors. I think the Warriors were a very interesting team. I mean, watching I'll put it to you this way: I'm already looking forward to the Steph Curry 30-for-30, you know, that comes out in 15 years, because watching him play, watching that rhythm of his, you know, his off the dribble three pointers, it was pretty impressive. You know, it was really impressive. Now, everyone wanted to do that thing like, hey, if LeBron and Curry switched places, you know, LeBron would have swept with the Warriors. And like, yeah, but that's not really the point of that. It's like, and there's also a point where you go like, when will the Cavaliers ever, I mean, are the Cavaliers as an organization sort of doomed to never put a good enough team around LeBron?
Well, it's
as, you know, that's why he left in the first place. I mean, remember, there's a history of this. Going back to Carlos Boozer, could have been his Scottie Pippen. But he left
1 year too early. He should have just stayed, and maybe LeBron never leaves to begin with.
Right. So they've never really built that team. Remember, they had an aging Shaq on the Cavaliers. That's how, like, you know.
Wait, did Shaq play on the
Cavaliers? Devontae was sleeping with his mother, and the Celtics came in and knocked them out, you know, on their way to a final, and then he went to Miami. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, everyone's saying that, like, you know, basically, like, Mario Chalmers and half the Heat are going to end up, and maybe Dwayne Wade will end up in Cavalier land. And that'll be interesting.
That's, you know what, you just blew my mind, because 2 weeks ago, we went through all the Shaq teams, and I completely forgot about the Cavaliers. I had Phoenix, I had Boston, I had Miami, and of course Orlando, and just for some reason, yeah, the Cleveland years escaped my mind. Well, those were the better years of Shaq. I'm almost done playing.
I believe it goes like this. I believe it goes Magic, Lakers, Heat, Suns, Cavaliers, Boston.
Yes, I know he did. He did retire with the Celtics, and I think they're gonna should they retire his number? No, but if they were the Yankees, they would. Are you getting a little sick and tired of the Yankees retiring just everything that wears a Yankees jersey over 5 years?
I don't pay attention to it at a certain point. At a certain point, you know, I think God has to ignore the devil, and it's an important point. You just, I'll take this opportunity to say that, you know, just recently announced is the Boston Red Sox on July 28th will be retiring number 45, worn by El Doro Pedro Martinez. So let's give it up for El Doro, a man who came in against the Indians with a bad back and threw six no-hit innings in relief. Pedro Martinez was amazing. I got to see him in person several times. Truly, truly an amazing athlete to watch. Magical, you know?
Well,
the guy who struck out 5 of 6 All-Stars in the 99 Fenway All-Star game. I happen to be wearing my Fenway All-Star t-shirt right now. He was an amazing magician with baseball, you know, an amazing plus. You know, he had three out pitches, you know, an amazing changeup, an amazing fastball.
And kudos to the MLB Network for bringing Pedro Martinez in. His insight when it comes to pitching and kind of those unspoken baseball things that happen is incredible, and it really does add to their broadcasting and their insight. So if you get a chance, I think he's on 4 or 5 nights a week. Baseball Tonight, they usually have him at the desk. But yeah, and for him, it was his fingers, like his index and middle finger on his pitching hand. He could bend them like halfway to his wrist, so it enabled him to put this crazy like movement on the pitch that you couldn't mimic or you could never train for because you didn't have that flexibility in your fingers.
He has calluses right at his where our fingernail is. He has calluses right there where the ball. In other words, like the ball. He did a lovely job of explaining once, but how he gets at every centimeter of his fingers touches the ball to create spin.
Yeah.
And so there's a thing where as the ball comes off his very fingertips, it's so fast and friction that there are calluses right there, basically right at his fingernail.
Well, it was a good weekend for baseball. I mean, you guys took 2 out of 3 from the Royals. When I say you guys, the Red Sox did in Kansas City, so that was good for you. And there was a no-hitter this weekend thrown by University of Missouri alum Max Scherzer, and the only pitcher in Major League Baseball to have 2 different color eyes.
And he almost had a perfect game, but he hit a batsman.
No, he didn't. He didn't hit.
He 8 2/3.
No, I was watching the game. He didn't hit the batsman. Tabata leaned into the pitch. It was the dirtiest.
Oh, I've seen it.
It was a 2-2 count. Okay, yep. 2 balls, 2 strikes. He throws him. Next pitch fouled off. 5th pitch fouled off. 6th pitch comes in inside. I guess it was a slider that didn't break. And I've read a couple reports, and there was a baseball insider that said that it wasn't dirty, that normally you as a batter you expect that pitch to break by the way the seams are spinning. So he was anticipating blah, blah, blah. It was in defense of him. But if you go and watch, he's got the huge Barry Bonds thing on his left elbow. The pitch is in, but all I know is he doesn't move back. He doesn't try to remove himself from the trajectory of the ball, but what he does do is lean into the ball down and it hits his elbow. He takes first base, and you know what, it's one thing if you're down 1-0 and it's a perfect game and you look, you're still one swing away from winning potentially if you get on base. You're down 6-0 and you pull shit like that and you go to first, then of course the next batter pops up, game over, no hitter, which is amazing and incredible. But now this is 2 perfect games that, as baseball fans, we've been robbed of just in the past couple seasons. You know, I've, you know, one.
But
you know,
I think that's okay. I gotta be honest with you. Here's what I just, like, I think he was wrong for now. Like, what I think the biggest disservice that he did is, you know, I gotta be honest with you. I don't have any empathy for batters having elbow armor anymore. And you're talking about a guy who, you know, I had Mo Vaughn. I had, you know, I had guys that strapped on big plate armor. But, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, if baseball were to rule in the future against batter armor, like especially that elbow pad, you know, seeing something like that, you know, it makes me a little less sympathetic because I don't think that batter doesn't take that ball off that elbow like that. If you're not armored, you're getting out of the way. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know.
But on the other hand, now, it's like, there's another part where I'm going to say, I don't think that I don't think the other team ever is an obligation to help you get a no-hitter or get a perfect game. I grant you, it was 6-0, but I think also as an athlete, I'm saying if I'm the guy sitting in the box, I don't want to go to, and I grant you, I'm the last out. But I don't want to get a perfect game. I'm not trying to get sat down and be one of the guys that he perfected.
No.
I don't want that. It's like, so, you know, it's like, hey, if I get on base and instead of being a perfect 27 up, 27 down, there were 28 of us, you know, that's what I'm trying to do as a batter, as an athlete, because that's my job.
Yeah.
And when you say, and when people say, like, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying, you know, the fans have been robbed of a perfect game or two perfect games over the last past couple seasons. That's what makes them so special. They're so rare that even with eight innings in the books, eight and two-thirds innings, and just one more batter, a single out to go, two strikes, they were down to their last strike, and you know what? Just like that, it vanished. Now, what's interesting about that, because think about it this way, you know, if he'd hit the batter, because Pedro Martinez, I believe, has a no-hitter that involves, I think it's David Wells. Like, David Wells involves a perfect game, and someone gets hit by a base, but then they're, like, picked off.
You know, really?
I want to say David Wells with the Yankees.
Well, I know he had the perfect game in 98.
So one of them have no-hitters where a batter gets on, but then it gets wiped off the base path.
And
that's one of those interesting things where, you know, put it to you this way, if Max had hit or walked someone anywhere during the game, and so it was 28, and it was a no-hitter, we would all just be celebrating, you know,
just
amazing. Max Scherzer got a no-hitter. It only seems diminished because he was moments away from a perfection.
He was one pitch away, and it's one of those things where, you know what, look, he had two pitches that he fouled off. You know, if he strikes him out on either one of those pitches, you know, this isn't an issue. But the issue for me is the way that Tabata handled it, like A.J. Pruszynski would or Brett Lowry would have, just in a dirty, cheap way. And that's where it gets me. And I hope that he wears pitches every at bat that he goes up against the Nationals the rest of the season. And yeah, the Nationals won 6-0, but you know, I hope the GMs around baseball remember that when they're looking at this guy as a free agent and know what kind of personality he has as being an asshole. Like a guy like that, that does that at bat, just think how he's going to be off. Like, you think he's going to let you in at a yellow light? No. You think he's going to do you any favors? No, he's not. And that's just not the type of player that's good for the game of baseball. And that's just my opinion. And, you know, you could argue, you know, any player, and that's an A-Rod knocking the ball out of the first baseman's, you know, mitt, you know, all those plays.
It was Bronson Arroyo.
Yeah.
2004.
Yeah. And that's
I'm curious to see. I'm the most curious thing. What I was really wondering about today was, what does Scherzer do next time he faces this guy? Because I'm assuming he's going to hit him again.
I hope he does. Yeah.
I'm assuming, hey, you thought you got hit by a pitch last time you saw me? I'm giving you the fastball, and I'm going to drill you with it.
No,
like,
I hit you hard. I hit him right in the elbow again every single time he comes up. It's like, it doesn't matter. Guy on bases loaded, you're wearing it right in the elbow. But, and you know what? This is what's great about baseball. You know, there's a lot going on right now. We got the All-Star stuff. You know, let's go ahead and get into our interview. We bring Chris Kambler on at the Fake Ned. You can read his bloggings at brokenbatsingle.com. Great baseball insider. We get into just the Royals All-Star balloting. Is it stuffing? Is it not? Just, you know, kind of where the season's going right now. And again, guys, thanks for listening on Stitcher. Follow us on on Sportsaholics at Sportsaholics on Twitter. But yeah, guys, I really appreciate all the listeners, man. It's been overwhelming and it's been awesome, and we appreciate you guys help spreading the word, because that's really right now, just having relaunched, that's how the word's getting out, and it's working. And to all those of you in Virginia, thank you for listening. Colorado stepped up last week, Eric. We got a lot of listeners now in Colorado, so that's kind of cool.
All right.
Which I like, because, you know, in Colorado, they're just sitting around smoking a blunt. They're probably going to listen to the whole episode in one sitting, is all I'm saying.
I certainly hope so. And I hope they have plenty of munchies to get them through. Sadly, I haven't been back to Colorado. I left the very day before marijuana went legal.
Well, there's no reason. Colorado's all right. No rush back there. You can just go to the mountains down in SoCal. It's the same thing.
All right, so let's get to the interview, yep. And we'll see you on the other side. I'll see you on the other side.
Absolutely. We'll be right back with Chris Kamler at the Fake Net. Trash like Bob, you know.
Larry.
Yeah, Hurricane Larry coming through Valdosta, Texas. It's like, yeah, that has a nice ring to it. Well, listeners, this we are on with Chris Kamler. You can find him on Twitter at the Fake Ned, our Royals insider, actually thousands of people's Royals insider. You can find some of his work at pinetarpress.com. Chris, thanks for coming back on Sportsaholics. I was looking back over our episodes. I believe this is your fourth time on Sportsaholics, episode number 78.
One more time, I get a free set of steak knives, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Which is very convenient, because I'm about ready to replace the steak knives that I have in my kitchen. And so now I've got a place to send those. Which is fantastic.
Win-win for everybody.
Speaking of win-win, I just want to talk Royals, and I want to talk a hashtag that I started, Start Nine Royals. And I've never started a hashtag, but it's weird to watch it kind of grow. And I know the Sungwoo Lee hashtag of last summer, something that you cradled in its infancy and watched, you know, grow into a monster. But you know, what's with this Royals push in the Midwest, in Kansas City? I know I've already voted 105 times today. Is that everybody? Is that what everybody's doing? Or how's it breaking down?
It seems so, man. A weird story in this town, you know, from last October and last August just continues to get weirder and crazier. And it's a good time to be a Royals fan. It's a good time to be in Kansas City. It's just a ridiculous environment around here, and you're seeing it basically explode into this orgy of support for this team, to the point that they're going to get legitimately more all-stars voted into the starting lineup than any other team in history. Salvador Perez is on pace to have more all-star votes than any other player in history. And the thing about it is, everybody's so pissed off, but all we're doing is going out there and voting. We're not gaming the system. We're just sitting on our lunch breaks and our, you know, breakfast and hitting send.
Yeah. Hey, it's not my fault.
It's so popular right now.
Well, look, I got to be honest. Up front, I guess I should say, because I am always honest. I'm not a liar. I got to be up front and say that at this point, whenever all the backlash started happening and people started complaining and moaning, that's, you know what? I started playing dirty, and Josh yep. at gmail.com might have voted for some Royals All-Stars, as will Steve at Gmail and Craig at Gmail.
That's That's right.
Did I find a loophole? Yeah, you're damn right I did. And I'm going to vote every day until July 2nd, which is the last day you can vote. So, guys, if you're listening and you're a Nationals fan, you're a Pirates fan, first of all, if McCutchen doesn't make it, that's a crime in itself. Get out there and vote, because Chris and I, we're voting. You can vote, too. I mean, if you're reading an article about the Royals starting eight, maybe nine players, in that time it took you to read half of that, you could have voted 17 times.
And it's beautiful, John, the way that this has kind of evolved. You know, we voted, let's call it like 3 weeks ago. We had, I think, six guys in there, and they're six legitimate guys, the All-Star team.
Now, once people started
complaining that we only had six, then we started voting in the guys that, you know, maybe you're also on the fringe of the All-Stars, the Mike Moustakas's, the Kendry Morales's. And then last week, we started just going crazy, and we got our second baseman Omar Infante in there, and we also got Nori Aoki, who is now an outfielder with the Giants. He's now in the top three in outfielders for the National League.
Hashtag vote Omar.
Change in two leagues right now.
Hashtag vote Omar. Hashtag vote Nori. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about too, because like, I don't want to take away from the fact that Nori Aoki is having an incredible season this year in San Francisco and should be an all-star regardless if Royals fans are voting for him. And I think the same argument could be made for Mike Moustakas and Kendry Morales. Statistically, they're up there. They've gotten clutch hits. Moustakas defensively, I like what he does over there. I've got no complaints. So I think that's on the backside of this. And one of the bad things is, players – it's kind of getting washed out. They're not getting their due. You know, I want people to understand that Eric Hosmer is a legitimate all-star, not just because a bunch of fans voted him in. The same thing for Alcides Escobar. I've been waiting for an all-star appearance from him, forever. You know, and he's perennially, barring an injury, he should be an all-star the next 6, 7, 8 years. I mean, the guy's incredible. Yeah. So I don't want that to get lost in all this all-star ballot stuffing, that these guys are just making the team just because of the votes. These guys are legitimately, I mean, there are legitimate, Kane, correct? That's legitimate.
I think so. And, of course, you're seeing an Eric Hosmer over at Miguel Cabrera, who easily could be a 15-time all-star. You're seeing guys like the shorts, the Altuve in Houston, maybe not getting in.
That's the true crime right there.
They could be. But, at the same time, it started kind of as a goof. But also in all of this has been the fact that, you've got this silly, this time it counts, tied into it so that, it's tied in with home field advantage and stuff. And so I think what this has been able to expose, and it certainly wasn't the intention early on, but this has been able to expose, this really is a popularity contest, and so let's just have the fans go out there and not have it tied to any postseason responsibility. But, we certainly are going to have some of the – that's what really angered fans. But at the same time, how many years – was Jeter past his prime and still voted into the All-Star game? How many years, did we see George Brett and Mike Schmidt, several years after they had passed their prime voted in the All-Star game? So it is kind of a give and take, and I'll certainly take the one-year hit because this is fun as hell.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't know. Jeter's an incredible player, and, did I walk around Kauffman Stadium last year in his comeback farewell tour, whatever it was, with a sign that read number two most overrated player of all time? Yes, I did. But I respect that wasn't anything against Jeter. That was everything against the goddamn Yankees fans that were packing Kauffman Stadium that weekend.
Yep.
And did I get heckled with, how many rings do you got? I'm like, I just replied, welcome to Kansas City. That's the only thing I said to anybody. Through all the you're an asshole I got. You're a jerk. I bet someone said something about how I don't have a girlfriend because I'm an asshole, or
class of Yankees fans.
I do respect, Jeter's great, but he got in an extra 4 or 5 years, and the same can be said for a lot of players. And there's this big push right now, and I've noticed it on MLB TV, not so much on Baseball Tonight, but it's almost undeniable. It's this new youth, they're calling it the youth movement, all these hot prospects that are now surging into baseball. And I love it. And I'm a passionate baseball fan, but I like it on an outside perspective because it's finally kind of bringing the prospect element into baseball, something that there is in the NFL, that there is in the NBA, and I'm talking about the whole package, like with the NBA draft and knowing the players before the draft. And I think they're starting to come around with that, you know. So I think the more young talent that's kind of in the limelight, you know, the better for the league. And I think that the league's doing a better job of actually branding it.
Well, I will agree with you, John. And I, you know, I've got a 12-year-old here at home, and I'm on the board of directors for our little league here in town, and. What the NFL has really been able to do is make it a 12-month league by doing by spotlighting some of those things. And what has kind of happened for Major League Baseball is, you know, they have the draft and the College World Series and stuff, and that all happens in the summertime. But you're seeing the youth get back into baseball again. Our numbers in our league, and I've been with our league for 30 years now. Our numbers in our league started to dip. 10 years ago, started to go down by almost 25%, 30%. We are seeing kids playing baseball this year in record numbers. I mean, just absolutely record numbers. And that's, you know, that's on top of the spike in soccer and the spike in basketball. I think as you see kids play less football because of the concussions and whatnot, they're going to start turning to basketball and baseball. And as baseball fans, I know you're as big a baseball fan as anybody. That just means that there's going to start to be this new crop. It may take 10 or 15 years, but, you know, you really can appreciate guys like Lorenzo Cain, who
didn't start playing
baseball until 10 years ago. It's nuts, and we're going to see a lot more of those stories.
Well, and I think, you know, it's something a buddy of mine, he's got a 10-year-old, and I kind of call it the Earl Woods effect or the Tiger Woods effect.
Yeah.
And it's not intentional, like in the case of my buddy, but, you know, we were all around as the kid grew up and we're playing catch with them, you know, so he's playing catch and we're throwing balls at the kid when he's 5'6" and we're adults. And, you know, so he gets into organized baseball and all of a sudden, you know, things slow down a little bit, you know? And so, you know, you're going to see a lot more of that. And obviously the coaching and, you know, just the fundamentals are taught at an early age and just the year-round constant play. But I think now more than ever, you know, even with Bryce Harper, you're seeing teenagers that can step into the league. And there's always been your Ken Griffey's and, you know, every 20 years a teenager that can come in. I just think it's going to be a little bit more frequent than it has in years past. And they'll be ready to go. You know, look at Bryce Harper. You know, he's, I think two or three home runs away from his home run total from last year already. You know, it's just a matter of maturing. And I don't see him slamming his helmet as much and just losing, you know, flipping out as much as he used to. But it's definitely a bright time for baseball.
You made a great point, John. And
being recorded.
Oh. Sorry, I think I hit the wrong button on my phone.
Oh, it's all good.
My big fat chin. No, you made a great point because, you know, what did Tiger Woods and Earl Woods kind of do to that establishment when he came up? He really shook up the system. And you're seeing teams, you know, like the Royals with all their little, you know, hand gestures, and you're seeing Bryce Harper and Yasiel Puig and these guys that don't know any better, but they're really sparking an interest. And that is what's pissing off the, you know, the old guard in baseball. And that old guard, quite frankly, is stodgy. These are the same guys that don't want to bring back or don't want to move, you know, to the designated hitter all through the league. And they don't want to do a lot of these things. And they fought replay for so many years and they did all this stuff. You're seeing these teams come in with this youthful exuberance and having fun and making it a kids' game again. The Royals and the fans here in this town are just absolutely embracing it. I bet you there's all kinds of Puig jerseys walking around that town out there.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's just a fun time to be a fan of people having fun, and it's a great look for baseball, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And
if you can't get that, if that pisses you off, then maybe you're part of the problem. I guess is what we're saying to these people. You know, if voting on if voting 35 times from SteveSteveSteve@gmail.com, if that really is what pisses you off in the morning, then maybe you need to dial it down a notch and, you know, just go, you know, take a pill or something.
You know, and that's...
Because we're having fun.
And baseball's, you know, it's like they're all about history. It's funny, you know, the story that came out recently about the National League and the designated hitters, that ultimately when they put the thing to a vote in like 78 or 87, like some guy, the owner of the Phillies or something, was on a fishing trip and couldn't... Yeah, it couldn't make it. And so it's like we would have had the DH in the NL for the last 35 years had he not gone fishing for smallmouth bass that weekend, right. You know. And to come full circle back to the voting thing, ultimately it's just shining a light on baseball publicly. It's getting people interested. It's getting people talked. I'm talking about it. I'm curious to see what the Nelson ratings for the All-Star game will be this year with all this.
I'll bet you they'll be up because it's gonna be fun just to watch those first plannings with all those safety hats out there. It's gonna be absolutely.
Well, I really want to get a customized, and I put it up on Twitter. The customized just with Royals jersey All Star that just says Start 9 with the number 9 on it.
I love it.
I mean that would be second only to your fake Ned Yost jersey that you put into retirement. And listeners, guys, if you're out there, Chris authored an amazing book that was at the Silence, the series, the season of Sung Woo, I believe. Did I screw that up?
Yep, you nailed it.
Okay, good. Great book, incredible read. Baseball fans in general, you know, if you're a baseball guy and you like reading books on specifically baseball, definitely grab it, you know, especially if you're a Royals fan, because it just kind of retakes you through the season and, you know, and some of the interesting stories and pardon the ambulance as it drives by. But, you know, just like with your brother-in-law and going, you know, with that rain out and just dredging through, you know, a long game like that, but ultimately realizing it's like, hey, we're there to watch a game, to enjoy it with our sons, and it's about them and them having a good time, and just so many stories like that. So, listeners, I encourage you to go out there. Where can they find the book at, Chris?
You can find it at camlerbook.com. That's KAMLERbook.com, or Amazon.com, or just go to @thefakened, and it's up there in my bio, and you can find it from there.
Yeah, and sports fans, I highly recommend following Chris at @TheFakeNed on Twitter. Always full of funny stuff and always full, very retweetable. I guess that's the best way to put it in Twitter terms. Very, very
retweetable. Like fart jokes, it's a good Twitter feed.
Absolutely. Very retweetable content. And actually, you know what? Before we let you go, I wanted to talk about the umpiring, the Twitter there and your schooling of umpires. Could you talk about that briefly?
Yeah. So I played ball through youth until I was 14, and then realized that my skill level was not as such that I could make the freshman baseball team. So I started umpiring when I was 14, and I umpired for the next 25 years. I retired last year after I had a surfing accident there in California, which the book kind of goes into a little bit. But I started kind of doing some podcasts and some umpiring stuff. But umpiring is so it's a dying art form because of the way that youth baseball is and the way that the way that society has kind of become and the fact that people just don't pay much attention to it. So there's a lot of science that can go into it, and there's a lot of athleticism and a lot of things that can make you better umpires. And so it's if you have a chance, any of your listeners have a chance to learn a little bit about umpiring, it's not just, you know, the one call that you see blown. It's getting into position, and it's all this other stuff, and it's there's a lot to it, and there's not enough. There's not enough youth umpires to, we were just talking about how popular baseball is going to be. Well, if you get more games, you're going to have more umpires. And it's really important for people to go out there. And I know
you know, California is a year-round baseball town, so baseball state, so they need a lot of umpires. And any time you get a chance to go out there and learn some of the ins and outs of it, even if it's just for a game or two, you'll gain a completely different respect for the game of baseball.
Well, that's
and so. Yeah, that's why.
No, I was gonna say, you know, for those of you listening, they're like, you know, baseball's a boring sport, you know. Look, I've watched baseball my whole life, and even to this day, like, I will uncover something that I've never noticed before. And as you mentioned with the umpire, you know, if you really sit and analyze a baseball game, you know, there's so many things that go unsaid, you know, verbally, but, you know, physically are said, you know, back and forth between the pitcher and the catcher and the umpire and the batter, all these things that are going on that if you're actually watching for them, you know, little things like, you know, if the batter doesn't think it's a good call, you know, he steps out, well, not so much this year, but, you know, steps out of the box, maybe stretches an extra 2 or 3 seconds, or just kind of, you know, just kind of makes a little scene of it, shows up the umpire a little bit, you know, and it's like that stuff happens all the time, and that's what leads to fights and ejections. So when it happens in the seventh inning randomly, you're like, well, that was pretty random. It's like, well, go back and look at his previous two at bats and notice how for 15 seconds he sat there and bitched about every single call, and then wonder why he got thrown out in the seventh inning.
We had a good one last night in our 12 and under game, John. We had the umpire, who's a really nice guy. He does a lot of games of ours, and our team's just awful, and that's fine. But, you know, one of the umpires took a foul ball off the mask, and so then we had to kind of educate our catcher, say, hey, man, there's kind of an unspoken thing.
Yes.
Walk the ball out of the pitcher and let him walk that off a little bit, and it's a show of respect because you guys are both back there battling. And you think that that's not a big deal, but those umpires that know about the catchers that, you know, respect them, they'll respect them in turn. It's not that they're going to do you any favors, but it's just that you have a more workable
work
environment.
They're not going to not do you any favors either. You know, it's the same thing, even in parks and recreation, and even in park league basketball. Anytime there's a foul, or I grab the ball and I walk it over to the ref every time, every opportunity I get, just so I can just stare him right in the face and look at him in the eyes 20 times during the game, just so maybe he gives me.
If you walk into a Starbucks and are a dick to the barista, it's not that he's gonna spit in your coffee. It's just that he's, you know, he might not give you that extra dime that falls on the floor or whatever. You know, it's karma. And it is all it is. It's just karma sometimes.
Absolutely.
Umpiring is a lot of karma.
And I love it, too, because, you know, Salvi will do that. Or, you know, when he gets hit in the chest and then the umpire. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Actually, what's the thing called where they pull out? It was the one in your book that you gave to the umpire from the series.
Oh, the indicator. The indicator.
Yes, the indicator. They'll pull that out. Or no, I guess I'm thinking it would be of the brush. But notice how, like, if someone gets hit with a foul tip on the foot or something, notice how they spend, you know, 2 minutes brushing off home plate meticulously.
Yep, exactly, you know. Right.
But that, yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the many reasons why I love baseball. But again, listeners, go get a copy of that book. Follow Chris at The Fake Ned, and go out and vote Royals. Hashtag Start 9 Royals. Hashtag Vote Nori. We still love you, buddy. Hashtag Vote Omar. Nothing against you, Jose Altuve. Just bad season. Bad timing.
Yep, bad timing. It's a fun time to be a baseball fan in Kansas City. We're excited for you to come back. Maybe you can come back for some postseason games again this year.
You know what? Let me start that off the right way. When there are postseason games, absolutely planning on it. In a perfect world, you know, Oakland's out, so I can't plan on going up there for a game. But, you know, maybe Anaheim in a perfect world again, a rematch. That I wouldn't mind, you know, watching them win the first two in Kansas City because they would win the division. And then, you know, sweeping in Anaheim. That'd be fantastic.
That'd be awesome.
Well, man, again, the time, it's awesome, man. We've been killing it. And so we'll give you a call here, you know, at probably All-Star break, and we'll see if we get all 9 Royals in. And guys out there, if you don't like it, go vote. That's all I say. It's like MLB.com/vote or something like that.
That's all right. I may have voted 35 times just while we were on the air. So, you know, I mean, that's time that somebody else didn't vote for Altuve or somebody. So, sorry, guys.
Absolutely. Well, hey, Chris, Thanks for coming on again. Guys, remember, follow him, hit him up online at TheFakeNed. And we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, John. You do a great job. Enjoy it.
All right, thank you, Chris, for coming back on again. I think for your fourth time. Follow Chris at the Fake Ned, BrokenBatSingle.com. PineTarPress.com. Broken Bat Single is another great Royals show. I don't know where it got broken, but PineTarPress.com. Sorry about that. I've been giving out the wrong website there.
I love this story, Cheese. I love that the Royals fans are getting out there and making democracy in America and the internet work for them. What's next on the show?
Next, actually, we're going to talk with Bart Slabcorn, who's an insider for the Padres. We're going to talk about just their trades in the offseason, what's good, what's bad. There's been a lot of bad, and maybe they even get an all-star, but Bart is a great insider with the Padres, blogs at gaslampball.com. Great writer, great insight. So, yeah, we'll be right back.
And I hope there's a little insight into why I wasn't named their new manager. In the last episode, I put my name in the ring. Granted, I'm only a fan, you know, but it seems I wasn't named Padre manager. I hope your interview gets to the bottom of
it. Hey, a little known fact, the only team in Major League history to have three different losses in a row with three different managers. So, little known fact. All right, guys, we're going to go to break. We'll be back with Bart Slabcorn. All right, we are back on Sportsaholics. We've got our first real Padres guest, I guess you could say, Bart Slabcorn, who's a Padres insider at gaslampball.com. That's gaslampball.com, so check out some of his work there. Bart, how are you doing today, man? Thanks for coming on Sportsaholics.
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me.
And I know, you know, we met at the winter meetings back in December, and at that time, it was... a lot was going on with the Padres. They went from, you know, they were completely off the radar, and then AJ Preller comes in and just plays baseball chess in a way that not a lot of people had ever seen before, and very bold moves, and you know, it looked like a bright season, and we're almost halfway through, and things really haven't worked out quite like they had imagined.
That's true. I was there when the Matt Kemp trade was announced, and that certainly created a lot of buzz. And then obviously in short order after that, the other pieces were added that we all have seen on the field for the Padres this year. A young talent, a lot of prospects were sent in return for these players that we're seeing on the field at the major league level. So I think last week you saw the Padres replenish some of their prospect pool with some really good draft selections. And so they're trying to replenish that now. But most of the pieces that they acquired definitely came with some big question marks. And some of those question marks have come true, unfortunately. And an example of that would be Will Myers back on the disabled list this week with some wrist problems. His health was a big question mark coming into the season. Defense was a question mark, and you've seen players like Will Middlebrooks, Jed Jerko, defensively struggle as well as offensively struggle. So some of the players have exceeded expectations. I think Derek Norris has been as advertised. Obviously, Justin Upton has been as advertised. James Shield, both on the field and in the clubhouse. But some of those question marks that we knew going into the season have sort of translated into some of the inconsistencies that AJ Preller cited when he let Bud Black go earlier this week.
Now, and that was after was it a 7-year relationship with the Padres?
Parts of 9 seasons, but had been the manager since 2007.
Wow. Okay. And then, so he's replaced by Pat Murphy. You know, it's kind of a nice baseball story, if you will, promoted as a 23-year-old would be at any position on the field, but from AAA, but in a managerial role as the interim coach with the Padres. And, of course, a long, prestigious career coaching at Arizona State, which is a collegiate powerhouse and has been for decades. And he was one of the people that, you know, that helped create that team there. Now, is there any possibility of this becoming a permanent, or is this just a quick band-aid, or is the rest of the season, can he win this job out?
The letter seems to indicate that this is sort of an audition that the Padres front office really likes Pat Murphy. You may recall that the Brewers requested to interview Pat Murphy for a major league coaching position earlier in the season, and the Padres didn't allow that to happen. And so I think for a while now, the Padres have thought very highly of Pat Murphy and thought that he has a bright future and is capable of doing the things that they want to do. I think A.J. Preller will evaluate the results on the field between now and the end of the season and where this team ends up. Mathematically, there's still a lot to play for with the two wild cards. Really, nobody's out of the race at this point.
I agree.
Are not. So I think, you know, Pat Murphy will get a chance to see what he can do and to see how his style fits with A.J. Preller. Probably one of the big wild cards in that equation is where this team goes in terms of its medium-term structure, and what I mean player structure, and that I mean by that is, are they going to sign Justin Upton to a long-term deal, or are they going to flip Justin Upton for some prospects at the trade deadline this season? And that a lot depends on where they stand in the standings 2 or 3 weeks from now. So it's a more of a long-term project of getting this team to a contending level, then that may count for more in favor of taking a step back and evaluating a broader pool of candidates. If they feel like they're ready to win for the next 1, 2, 3 years with the talent that they have in-house, and they really like Pat Murphy and how he reacts with that group of players, then maybe they keep Pat Murphy. So I think a lot of it will depend on how the next 4 to 6 weeks play out and where this team ends up, both at the major league player profile as well as the projections for the prospect sheet kind of going into the next few years.
Yeah, Murphy, he kind of has like a Jim Leland kind of a vibe about him, you know, just kind of an older, rough guy, you know, tens of thousands of innings under his belt. And sometimes, you know, that's just what you need. And that commands respect, you know, in the clubhouse. And, you know, when you're in a position for 9 years like Bud Black was, you know, sometimes I don't want to say you get comfortable, but, you know, people around you maybe get comfortable and in this case, maybe a little too comfortable and underperform. But I think, you know, the time was definitely now to make a move like that. I mean, a lot of you could argue that it should have been made, you know, maybe back in December during winter meetings.
It's Bud Black's walk year. This is the last year of his contract. So I think understand the decision to leave him in place and see whether he fits with the type of team that A.J. Preller wants to build. It didn't work out. The team was really too inconsistent. And you know, this team plays at a very high level sometimes, and then other times, you know, they've been shut out as many times as any other team in baseball already. So, you know, that was too inconsistent for A.J. Preller. Pat Murphy, by contrast, high-energy guy, a guy who isn't afraid to get in a player's face and hold them accountable for their inability to execute. And some of that is things that has driven a lot of Padres fans crazy this year and even in years past. I mean, you're not being able to execute sacrifice bunts, not being able to have productive at-bats, swinging at the first pitch after a four-pitch walk, down by 3 runs, you know, those types of mental inconsistencies. And I think from an accountability standpoint, you might see greater accountability in the Pat Murphy regime than you did under the Bud Black era. And that's not to say anything negative about Bud. Everybody has nothing but praise for Bud Black and what he did, and he certainly was dealt a tough hand. Even this year, the injuries to Yonder Alonso is probably the first or second or third best hitter on this team and certainly having a great season this year, and he had to miss a long stretch, 2.5 odd weeks with an injury. So even this year, with the talent that he has had to work with, there still have been some injuries. Obviously, way underperformance of Jed Jerko, the person that they really expected to contribute both offensively and defensively, and really had a subpar showing thus far. So those kinds of things were working against Bud. I think Pat Murphy has an opportunity to turn some of those things around, and then he also needs for the players to step up and to perform at a more consistent level as well.
And there's a certain level of familiarity with some of the players on the roster with Pat Murphy already, you know, having come up in El Paso. I mean, I know they've acquired a lot of new players, but I mean that had to have been something they took into consideration when they gave him the job.
Absolutely, and lots of the players have said already publicly that they loved playing for Pat Murphy at AAA. So the players that you've seen come up through the farm system have all said sort of uniformly that they love playing for Pat Murphy. So, yeah, I think that's the familiarity will certainly translate well for the players, especially those ones that have come up through the Padres farm system and have matriculated from AAA, you know, recently or had stints that have gone back and forth. A guy like Jed Jerko, you know, who got sent down not too long ago and spent some days and some weeks with Pat Murphy in the recent past. Hopefully some of that relationship, you know, translates over when Jed comes back up.
You know, and that's very encouraging when I'm hearing you say, you know, the guy's notorious for being hard-nosed, in-your-face coaching, and then you're quoting me players that say, I love this guy. I'll do anything for this guy. That's a combination that you don't see a lot in sports today, whether it's egos, money, you know, whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of oil and water in clubhouses these days, but it sounds like, you know, he's the type of guy that maybe can mix those together. And hopefully he does. You know, I think the Padres, they got a beautiful stadium. The fan base came back this year, you know, with the promise of a good team and a competitive team. And, you know, they might not be winning. Like you said, there's plenty of season left, but they are competitive. I mean, you can't argue that they're not. Even when they got Kimbrel, they were saying, you know, that just showed you where their head was at. They're like, well, if we're really serious, we need a closer, you know. All right, well, let's get him, you know. So I really do hope that they get something figured out, because, you know, as a Royals fan, the wild card can lead to anything.
That's true, and we've seen that. We've had some Super Bowl champions from a wild card status. We've had the Marlins obviously win the World Series from a wild card.
Giants last year, unfortunately.
You know, plenty of examples of just getting into the playoffs and getting hot and being able to make a deep run. And this team at the top level can certainly perform at a very, very high level. I mean, Justin Upton, Matt Kemp, James Shields, I would even put Yonder Alonso in that category, Derek Norris. These are guys with a lot of major league experience, a fair amount of playoff experience, and that has led their teams in stretch runs, and I think they're capable, certainly, of carrying a team into the playoffs. I think a key question for us is that group of sort of core Padres players. Will Venables had a great first half thus far. He's been a hot hitter. You know, can Tyson Ross and Andrew Kastner get it turned around and get that ERA, you know, sort of more in the threes and less in the fives, right? And see if we, and certainly the bullpen, you know, Quackenbush, I think, still has his best innings in front of him this season. Vincent is getting better after some early struggles. So if that core group can kind of raise their tide just a little bit, I think those high-level offensive additions and defensive additions from the offseason can certainly carry this team across the finish line.
Well, you know, what I love about San Diego is their when I came down here, I was surprised of the baseball history here, you know. And, you know, I mean, on your way down from L.A., you drive past, you know, Ted Williams Parkway, and then that goes back to the – was it the San Diego Missions? Was that the original Pacific Coast League team?
They've been the Padres, even back to their days in the Pacific Coast League.
Okay, that's right. And then – so that was a AAA team, and then they sold the affiliation, and then they just kept the name whenever they got the expansion team. And what was that, 68? Is that correct?
69. That's right. 69 was their first year as a major league team.
Now, when someone, you know, we got listeners all over the country, all over the world, and I've seen this with football where, you know, the Patriots or Chiefs or Raiders or, you know, they'll do a destination vacation just to go watch a game. And it's something I would highly recommend to anybody in Philadelphia, in Boston, Chicago, Minnesota, anywhere where it's horrible and muggy and hot and raining. Because for a very affordable price, you can fly in, you can take the train right in or the bus downtown. It's 2 minutes away. Hotel, walk right to the game. You don't even have to leave your hotel if you stay at the Omni. There's a bridge that goes right into the stadium. Kind of describe that Padres, even though I kind of painted a picture just then. Like, describe the stadium and the Padres experience for someone that's never been there.
Sure. So I've been to two-thirds of all the major league ballparks in this country, and I can tell you Petco Park is at the very top of that heap in terms of experience. Not an old stadium, hasn't been around. I think 2004 was the first, 2004 was the first year. Last year was 10 years at Petco Park, their celebration. So this is their 11th year in Petco Park. the way they've integrated the architecture of the Western Metal Supply building, it's got that retro feel to it. It feels like it's integrated into the East Village landscape.
Yeah.
You will not find better food and better local craft, brews than you find at Petco Park. Every local craft brew in San Diego is craft brew heaven.
Yeah. Little known fact, there's over 80 breweries in San Diego County, and they have what is regarded as one of the top beer festivals that's coming up here in a couple weeks, which, is not a bad thing to travel to San Diego to do either. Catch a ball game, go to a beer festival. But yeah, the Tony Gwynn Club or the 19 Club, they got tons of beer, great food up there.
Right. Yeah, it's great. There's a couple of bars in the stadium, one in the Western Metal Building at the top floor that you mentioned, some great group seating arrangements, and then just from barbecues, Hodez, Randy Jones Barbecue, Hodez Burgers, Phil's, Pizza Port. I'm going to leave a bunch of people out, but Mexican cuisine, the tacos, everything you can, obviously Tarantino sausages and Franks, everything in there. Great food all around the ballpark. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in the nosebleed seats in the 300 section or right down on the main concourse. Terrific food, terrific beverages as well. And great history. You can walk right up 11th Street towards the San Diego Public Library. See some great pictures of Lane Field, which was the original ballpark on the harbor here in San Diego where Ted Williams played. You can go down to the parking lot that used to be Lane Field and see a plaque that commemorates Ted Williams' playing days here in San Diego. So great history here, great minor league games as well, just up in Lake Elsinore.
Yeah.
Corey Luebke, major league pitcher, on his way back from rehabbing assignment pitch there last night. You can see major leaguers up at Lake Elsinore at the Diamond, just about an hour up the road.
Well, so, and another hit.
Take a great baseball weekend of it. Yeah.
Another hidden thing too. You can, from downtown. Also, if you really planned it out, I've done this to go see the Royals in Anaheim. You can take the train for $28, and the train station is Anaheim Stadium. So you can go from downtown to Anaheim Stadium in about 2 hours. I think it's like six total stops, but it's the most convenient thing ever for a baseball fan, so I would recommend that. Either way, LA, come down to San Diego or vice versa, it's an easy trip, but I would recommend the trip though to San Diego, because like you said, the history downtown and from what I understand, the stadium helped kind of rebuild what is now kind of a booming downtown. But from the stadium, you can see Coronado Bridge. I mean, a ton of Navy destroyers, and just it's really beautiful. I mean, as far as you're not on the waterfront, say like at AT&T or Pac Bell or whatever it is in San Francisco, you're not directly on the waterfront, but you're pretty damn close.
Right. And of course, walking out the Gaslamp Gate, you do still ride out into the Gaslamp District with great food, beverage, entertainment. So you're right on 6th Street at that point. So you're ready to have a good time when you leave the ballpark.
No, so Bart, what are your predictions leading into the All-Star break? I mean, let's just say, moving forward, playoffs, no playoffs?
Yeah, my prediction is that we're going to know in the next 10 days. In the next 10 days, 10 games to 10 days, we're going to know probably before the end of this month, we're going to know how this team reacts. If this team, if Pat Murphy is able to light a fire under this team can absolutely win the first or second wild card. I'm not sure they can chase down the Dodgers. The Dodgers have something really special going. I mean, what Jock Peterson has given that team, and we saw that heartbreaking catch.
Unbelievable.
Series here. Probably one of the best catches of the season, if not the next couple of seasons. Great offensive player, defensive player. So I'm not sure, and you know that the Dodgers are probably going to get Cole Hamels or one of the other pitchers that's going to be available at the trade deadline to fill out that rotation. So I'm not sure we can chase down the Dodgers, but I definitely think that this team is capable of getting the first wild card and getting a home playoff game for that play-in game with the wild card.
Well,
there's no question they're capable of that. We're going to know in the next 10 games whether this team responds to the firing of Bud Black and the hiring of Pat Murphy with vengeance, or whether they sort of fold up their tent and ride off into the sunset. We're going to know pretty soon.
Yeah, and then all you can hope too is that somehow the Cardinals meet up with the Dodgers in the playoffs early on.
That's right.
Because that is just their Achilles heel for whatever reason. Cardinal red. Like if I was a Padres fan and going to the games here against the Dodgers, don't wear Padres stuff. Wear Cardinal stuff. And they're Dodgers are bound.
Instead of throwback Thursdays, they can just wear like Cardinal Saturdays or something. They can just wear Cardinal jerseys against the Dodgers.
I mean, Clayton Kershaw has got like a 7 ERA. It's crazy. And then, real quick, Bart, before we let you go, I just wanted to talk about your GM, AJ Preller. I don't know too much about the guy, but how was he able to just kind of wine and dine and dance his way around and weave all these conversations and deals together in a matter of just a few days? Do you have any insight on that?
Well, I think his work ethic is probably the thing that I've heard the most from this guy. I mean, he basically sleeps in his office. He works just tireless hours all day, all night. That's the thing that I've heard the most consistently about him. Very creative mind. Has got people on his front office team that are traditional baseball types that do the eyeball test, as well as a lot of people who are advanced metrics guys. So he's one of the guys that likes to blend those two things together, which I think is a good combination. I think just, you know, elbow grease is probably the recipe for his success. That's probably going to be how he approaches the rest of the season, is just to grind it out and see, make his best call as to where we're at a sort of a decision point, which I guarantee you, one thing I can promise you is that AJ Preller already probably has 3 plans for the rest of the month and for the month of July in terms of trading both as a buyer and a seller. So he's already worked out those contingency plans, and when a new one pops up, he'll run it to ground as well.
Now I've heard and read that he's one of these people, he's one of these guys that he only sleeps 4 hours a night. Is there any truth to that? Have you heard that as well?
Whatever he does, he probably works 25 hours a day from what I can gather. I mean, he really, from everything that the insiders talk about, he works constantly, which, you know, you have to tip your hat to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, from an outsider's perspective, too, it's almost like, you know, kind of like what happened in Oakland at the end of last season, maybe working too much, you know, overworking it, you know, and, like you said, We'll know a lot more in 10 days by the end of the month, early July, you know, where the Padres are, where they're at. And hopefully on their way, you know, back to the playoffs. It's been a while.
I think there's definitely something to be said for structural soundness in your philosophy. I mean, if you look at the Dodgers and their success, I mean, they drafted Jock Peterson, I believe, in the 11th round of the 2010 draft. And that's the same draft that we drafted Jed Jerko in the second round. So, and of course, you drafted Carsten Whitson in the first round. So, you know, scouting and acquiring young guys fresh out of school and developing those guys to be able to produce at the major league level is something that the Cardinals do really well. The Nationals have done really well recently. The Dodgers, the Tampa Bay certainly did that for a while. And that breeds long-term consistent success. So then you're not taking a flyer on 10 guys. You're taking a flyer on 2 guys to get you across the finish line, and that's probably the goal, I would think, for a sound organization to get to that level.
Yeah, just be 1 or 2 calls away from having the final piece right there on your team. Yeah, that makes I guess you couldn't ask for more than that, or hopefully make no changes, you know, and then
if you're lucky. Yeah.
Well, before I let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts real quick on the hashtag vote Royals, this Kansas City Royals tsunami of all-star voting. What is that from a non-Royals Kansas City? You know, for me, I've voted probably 200 times already over the past month. But what are your thoughts on that? Are you for that, against that? Do you think it's just, you know, it's up to the fans, or?
So here's my take on that. And traditionalists will tell you that they want to be kind of, you know, filling out that little punch card ballot at the ball game like you've been doing since you went to, you know, games when you were a little boy or a little girl. I think there's something to that. I also think that the game is doing a good job of leveraging technology and social media into its brand, and I think they've got to keep doing that. So here's what I would say as a sort of a both-and solution. I've used the At the Ballpark app. It's a great app. So is the MLB At Bat app. Two great apps. Two of the best apps I've ever seen for a smartphone.
Absolutely.
You can download them, obviously, through the Play Store or whatnot.
I have the MLB. I watch every game. I got the Google Chrome, so I broadcast it to the TV. It's not, you don't pay $280. It's like $110 a year or something.
Exactly. So if you've got that At the Ballpark app, you can easily, when you check because you have to be in the ballpark to check in. So just let fans vote through that app when they're at the ballpark. And I think it makes sense to tie voting to being at a Major League Baseball game. I think that's fine. But you can still do it electronically. You can still let people vote multiple times if they come to multiple games or what, or give them multiple IP addresses, whatever. But I think, you know, kind of bridging that gap and encouraging people to use the app and to check in, you know, through social media has the opportunity for Major League Baseball to spread its brand even further. So that's how I would solve the problem, is let people vote as many times as they want to through the app when they check in at a game. And if, you know, that's a pretty good way to kind of meet both demands.
No, I think you're brilliant. I think you should send a letter to Major League Baseball if you haven't already, because that is a great idea where, you know, yeah, you can vote as many times as you want if you're at a game, or if you're at a minor league game, checked in, yeah, using the app. And then if not, you know, maybe limited to X amount of times. But not to say that Royals fans are exploiting the system, but they're just, you know, they're just using the system. And you know what? If you can vote 35 times, then vote 35 times.
I think any time Major League Baseball has that many people engaged in whatever market, whether it's the Kansas City market, the Tampa Bay market, the Nashville, Tennessee market, wherever, if they've got that many people engaged that fervently in a team, hey, that spells great things for the brand of baseball and for getting young people and people, millennials and people of all generations involved in the game and helping baseball retake its market share that it deserves.
No, and you're right. And you know what? We talked with Chris Kamler earlier in the episode, and he's involved with Little League Baseball in the Midwest. And he said since the Royals resurgence that they've had an incredible increase in Little League registration, and like they're in desperate need of umpires, and just it's just booming, which is great, you know. And at the end of the day, the more people that are talking about this on every morning show, even shows that aren't sports related, I've seen it on, you know. So the more of that happens, you know, the better.
Absolutely.
And so, well, hey, Bart, I appreciate your time. I mean, I went way longer than I anticipated because it, you know, was awesome and very, very informative. And we'd love to have you back on Sportsaholics later on, you know, see where the Padres are and see if they're able to pull out of this slump. But listeners, you can follow Bart at Bart Slabcorn. excuse me. That's BartSlabbeKorn on Twitter, and also at gaslampball.com. And we'll put links to that up at johnishere.com. If you go to the website there, I put up videos and everything. So, Bart, we'll put some of the links up there, listeners, if you want to go check it out. But, Bart, thanks for your time and your insight, man. I really appreciate it.
Okay, John, we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of your day, man.
You too, John. Dreams, determination, self-esteem, but now it seems they hesitate to be on my team. You know the routine when you winning and grinning, all up in your face like they was with you from the beginning. But on the flip side, when you watched them like a riptide, fools clown by how you slipped and let shit slide. Beside the fact, my voice is whack, clowns is running around talking about a smoke crack. Bart, thank you so much for coming on. That was awesome. We are going to have you back on. Hopefully the Padres can ride this storm. Probably not, but we'll see. We'll see. Who knows? But
good episode. I'm bushed, dude.
You know, it's a great episode, and I'm gonna be up in LA next week, so hopefully we can finally get face to face. But you know what? This is working. It's working for the fans, guys. Thank you for listening. Thanks for spreading the word on Stitcher, on iTunes, Sportsaholics. Follow us on Twitter at Sportsaholics. Eric, anything to add, real quick, before we're out?
If you have any questions, you can email us at sportsaholics@gmail.com. That's sportsaholics with an S. Also, you can find me every Sunday night at the Show Up, Go Up. Open mic variety show at the world famous Comedy Store, 11 to 1. You can follow us on Twitter at the Show Up, Go Up Show. You can follow me on Twitter at OMacarino. And you know what? And listen to Clean Head, the Ed Sweet podcast. I'm going to give them a little plug.
Exactly. Go to johnishere.com. I put a link up to their show. You guys can go to johnishere.com. Find the Ed and Clee show. He's Eric Marino. I'm John Schieser. Stay obsessed, guys.
Stay obsessed. Listen to the train whistle. That's the show. On a label that's unstable, chopping Bliggy on the table. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, fat lip? And I say, cool them. Who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, fat lip?
And I say, coolin', who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, fat lip? And I say, coolin', who am I kidding? Who am I fooling? When they be like, what's up, fat lip?